At least you do it.
Yeah.
I'd like to call the Commerce Committee to order. We have two bills up today. First one is by Representative Stevenson. Let's see if I can get all my stuff out. Representative Stevenson, did you succumb to the teasing and the hazing of freshmen and bring treats?
I did. I really did not want to let down Representative Garofalo. You know, I took his advice and wise counsel to heart.
Is he even here? Is he even here?
He's too busy chewing to answer the question.
He's hiding in the back?
Mr. Chair, over here, Lesh. Over here to your left.
Yeah.
I just want to say that, you know, anyone who complains about the hazing ritual of freshmen having to bring treats should not be a chair who requires members and lobbyists to do homework. That's all.
I don't do homework. Why should anybody else? Representative Stevenson, this committee, would you care to move your bill?
Yes, sir. Yes, Mr. Chair, I would move my bill. with a recommendation to refer to the general register, I believe is the correct motion.
Yes, we're going to the general register with this particular bill. You'll get to be hazed on the floor.
Sounds good.
There you go, sir. Do you have witnesses, or are you going to make an opening statement and then bring up your witnesses?
With the chair's permission, I'll make a brief opening statement explaining the bill, and then we do have testifiers today.
Okay. Please proceed.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, when I was growing up, my parents had a 1987 Forester inboard-outboard speedboat. And in the summer, we'd spend most of our weekend days out on the Mississippi River between Champlain and Coon Rapids, skiing and tubing and swimming. I can remember one day in particular. I was sitting in the back of the boat. I don't remember who was driving, but my brother was about to go tubing. He's about 4 years younger than me, and he was out in the tube in the water. And my dad was standing on the sun deck of the boat letting out the rope. None of us realized at the time, but the rope was looped around his ankle while it was going out until whoever was driving suddenly accelerated just enough, and the rope snaps. And all of a sudden, my dad dove over the back of the boat, over the propeller, and into the wake because he had realized in a split second that that rope was going to drag him into the water right onto the prop, and had the fortunate reaction to judge that he could dive over the propeller and into the water. And he did that, and fortunately he was completely unharmed, but he was a little shaken because he had felt the turbidity of the prop against his feet and legs. I'm pretty confident that he was, you know, mere feet, if not inches, away from really serious injury, if not death. I was probably 12 or 13 when that happened, and so insurance wasn't really on the forefront of my mind at the time. But I asked my dad this past weekend if he carried liability insurance on his boat, and he said, yeah, of course. We always insure all of our boats. And I said, Dad, if you had been a little less lucky when you dove over the propeller and had been injured, would you have expected that your insurance would have covered you? And he said, yeah. Of course, that's why you have insurance. My parents sold that Forester more than a decade ago, and the insurance policy that they had at the time is long gone, but the odds are pretty good that Dad wasn't protected. As it turns out, most boat insurance policies exclude liability coverage for the insured person, the boat owner, as well as people related to them by blood or marriage. You might be surprised to learn that. I certainly was. I think that people should get what they're paying for. And when you buy boat insurance policy, you do it to protect the people and the things you care about. I'm sure that I'm not the only parent of small children who shudders when they think about this issue. The bill before you would fix this problem by prohibiting insurance companies from excluding people from coverage under boat and umbrella policies just because they are related by blood or marriage to the insured person. Now, this might seem like a common sense idea to you, and I suspect that if you feel that way, it's because this is already the law for car insurance and has been since 1973. I suspect that opponents of this bill will argue that this will increase the cost of boat insurance, and that could be true, but I doubt it. The bill allows insurance companies to increase premiums if there is an increased cost, but they have to show actuarial data to the Department of Commerce to justify the increase. And we're just not talking about that many accidents. Minnesota has 800,000 boats. That's the most boats per capita of any state in the country, incidentally. Last year, there were 92 accidents total. We don't know how many of those accidents involved family members of the boat owner or even people who had boat insurance policies, but presumably it's a smaller subset of the 92. And in any event, I know that I would gladly pay the marginal cost of ensuring that my 6- and 4-year-old daughters are protected when we go out on our boat this summer. And I suspect that the vast majority of boat owners in Minnesota feel the same. Many of you are aware of the very compelling story of Courtney Godfrey, who suffered a terrible injury in a boating accident almost 2 years ago. Courtney has made it her mission to ensure that some good comes out of her terrible experience. And with the chair's permission, I'd like to turn things over to her now so you can hear her story.
Please, would Ms. Godfrey please come forward? Good afternoon. Please identify yourself for the tape and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Courtney Godfrey, and I am here to tell you my story in support of House File 476. In order for you to understand why I am here today, I want to take you back to September 15th, 2017. Just like most Minnesotans in the summer, we are spending our weekend out on the lake. As you know, those days are limited, especially in September, so we try to make the best of it and go out on the water at every opportunity. My little sister and her husband were visiting Minnesota for the very first time, and we were so excited to share with them the beauty of our home state and its 10,000 lakes. The one we happened to be on that day was Christmas Lake, the lake my husband grew up on. After a gorgeous day of water skiing and tubing, it was time to head in for a nice family cookout on the shore. But the food that day would go bad. My in-laws would arrive home to a flurry of first responders, and none of our lives would ever be the same. It's still hard today to recount the moments that would follow, but I've decided that it's important for you to hear. As experienced boaters trying to ensure our passengers' safety, I instructed everyone to sit down and hold on tight for a quick ride home. I followed my own instructions and found a seat across from the driver. But as my husband initiated a turn, the force was too much for my grip on the handles, and I was dumped into the water. Almost immediately, I felt a blunt force on my foot. As I tumbled around in the water, I contemplated what had just happened. It doesn't make sense now, but at the moment, I thought I'd hit the bottom of the lake and broken my foot. When I made it to the surface, I held my leg up out of the water and saw my perfectly pedicured toes, the distinct and bony bridge of my left foot detached and already losing its warm, living color. The propeller, I realized. My foot had hit the inboard propeller. I would find out later at the hospital that my foot was unsalvageable and I would live the remainder of my life as an amputee. It's amazing what happens to people when they're put in situations like that. My sister, a nurse by profession, tourniqueted my leg with the ski rope and at the very least saved me a lot of blood. I'll never forget the way that she looked as she pressed her hands firmly into my shoulders, instructing me to keep my eyes on her, almost pleading as she asked me to keep breathing, assuring me it was going to be okay. As I overheard my husband on the phone with 911, I remember hearing the distress in his voice as he begged them to get there as quickly as they could. Unsure of my condition, I told him I loved him. I told him to go on without me and start that family we had always talked about. I asked him to take care of my parents and to never lose his faith in Jesus Christ. If all that sounds like a nightmare, just wait. Because we would learn in the weeks to come was so cruel, it's hard to believe anyone could defend it. With the bills piling up, our home needing modifications, me in need of constant supervision and care, and unable to work, we were feeling more than just the physical strain of trauma. I have incredible health insurance. But within a week of getting home from the hospital, my health insurance provider was calling. They wanted to know if we had boat insurance. Why should they and my employer have to shoulder the entire cost if we had done the right thing and insured our watercraft? So we called our carrier to file the claim. It was then that we received the shocking news. Despite having full liability coverage on our boat, we were told that I was not covered for no other reason than the fact that we were married. So my husband called to file a claim with the provider of our umbrella policy. After all, he had bought the umbrella in case anything fell through the cracks with his other policies. The person on the other end of the phone told him the same as the last, a family exclusion, they called it. Put simply, we were the victims of a marriage penalty. If the accident would have happened the summer before when we had yet to tie the knot, this would not have been the case. If this would have happened to, say, my sister, who I mentioned was on the boat that day, she would have been covered. We started calling our friends to tell them to check their policies. Not one knew of the family exclusion, and all called their brokers to discover it was in their policies too. I've come to the Capitol not for myself. This won't benefit me. Not for any special interest group, but for the next family that endures such trauma, so that the insurance policy they faithfully paid into for however many years does what it's advertised to do, protect the people they care about most. It's an uphill battle. I knew it would be the day I vowed to take this on. But I'm doing what I know is right. The day I lost my foot, I gained a voice to stand up for those who would come after me. Every night, I ask God to guide me. I ask that he send me opportunities to help others. I pray that all this struggle, all this pain, not be for nothing. And as a person of faith, I truly believe he has sent me here today. Minnesota has one of the highest rates of boat ownership in the country. People of all income profiles in all corners of this state own boats. And while the occurrence of injury accidents on the water is relatively low, I won't be the last one to go through this. Please, please, pass House File 476 and let's put an end to this unfair exclusion. Thank you for listening, and I will stand for any questions if necessary.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm sorry that you had to go through this to find your voice. This is an awful lot of pain. Representative Stevenson.
And Mr. Chair, we do have, I think, one more testifier before we get to any questions at this point.
Thank you. I almost called you just Courtney. Ms. Godfrey, please step to the side. Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Please identify yourself for the tape and proceed.
My name is Josh Tuckscher. I'm an attorney at Meshbecher and Spence. I'm in private practice, and I have the good fortune to represent many injured families and individuals who find themselves facing family exclusions like this. Some exclusions that we are able to overcome on behalf of individuals, some which we are not. And I can tell you that in situations like this, most individuals find themselves with catastrophic losses like Ms. Godfrey, especially when there are family exclusions involved and a boat is the cause. So if I want to make myself available to the committee for questions that they may have. If there are any questions at all, I'm happy to entertain them.
Thank you. Are there any other testifiers? Well, wait a minute. Bob Johnson has listed here. I have two people on the testifying list, Bob Johnson and Greg Slather. And Bob, why don't you, Mr. Johnson, why don't you come on up?
Mr. Chairman and committee members, Bob Johnson, Insurance Federation of Minnesota. I represent property casualty insurers that write a majority of the policies sold in this state that would be impacted by House File 476, and that includes homeowners policies, these watercraft or boat policies, and umbrella policies. I'll repeat again, homeowners policies are impacted, watercraft and umbrella policies. If I could just take a minute just to kind of maybe help the committee background just a little bit on how folks cover their watercrafts and boats today.
Mr. Johnson, could I ask you to get closer to the mic?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Not working that well.
All right. So just for a couple of minutes about boat insurance and how people today, Minnesota consumers, what do they buy? So first, homeowners policies. Homeowners policies today in Minnesota provide coverage to many Minnesotans to their canoes, kayaks, boats with small horsepowers, and they include an endorsement that you can add liability coverage in. So that's one kind of box of policies, the way Minnesotans cover their watercraft boats, homeowners policies. The second one, if you get bigger boats with bigger horsepower, usually like above 50 horsepower, then actually boat policies are purchased for that, and that's got hull coverage, that's like property damage, liability coverage, and I'll come back to liability coverage, and medical payments coverage. So that's a first-party coverage that the family buying the boat policy can buy medical coverage for their family in the boat policy. So those are coverages readily available today. Then the third category is, it's called personal watercraft coverage. So the bill as it's drafted does not apply to jet skis, Sea-Doos, and wave runners. Those are covered under a separate document, a contract that's literally called personal watercraft policies. Those are not boat policies. And so those similar coverages are available. And then lastly, the umbrella policies. And I think folks on this committee are probably familiar with umbrella policies. But often it's $1 million or $2 million of additional coverage that a family, a household will buy to kind of lay on top of the various coverages that they have. But with that background, I would like to just, Mr. Chairman, briefly hit what from our industry's perspective, what I would ask you to consider as you're looking at this bill, serious unintended consequences if House File 476 is passed into law. First is the issue of the premium or cost increase. Of course it's going to cost more money to mandate a coverage that's today not in the policies. It's going to cost money when you mandate coverage that's not in the policy. So is this just a Minnesota issue? No. These exclusions are found in 47 states. There's three states, and if the committee wants, I can kind of segue into that later. Three states that do that differently. So 47 states, including Minnesota, for through time, has had family exclusions. We have a whole series of case law in Minnesota that apply standards to uphold exclusions. So we don't just get to throw into policies what we want. There's a whole series of standards that have to be met before exclusions are upheld by the Minnesota courts. So there is a premium and cost increase, and it is going to impact the policies that I referenced at the start, too. The whole issue of family exclusions. And I know this notion, and I had a good spirited discussion with the chief author last night about his bill and about our concerns, and we had a nice airing of, and I mean that, I think it was helpful. I hope it was helpful. And the whole issue of family exclusions, I would like the committee just to consider the following. This isn't a gap in coverage. Family exclusions are in policies because liability policies, and that's what this is, a liability policy is a coverage I buy to kind of defend and indemnify me if I do some act that, say, I hurt Mr. Sather here, then I buy liability coverage to defend and indemnify me. It's not a compensation deal. That's the purpose of liability. So it's to cover my actions that impact a third person. So somebody not within my family. So these exclusions have been found, again, around the country in Minnesota. I'm going to, in a second, talk about auto policies. But here's why. I just want the committee to consider the following. And the reason that the exclusions are there, the Minnesota courts, you could read a series of cases in Minnesota through decades of case law where our courts talk about and uphold family exclusions, and the words they use is a moral hazard. They say it's a moral hazard to permit lawsuits between family members when the members of that family have a common economic interest. And that's another phrase, a common, so what's the common economic interest? The family budget. So in a lawsuit between family members, a parent, a child, what's the incentive between those parties? The incentive is that you have an insurance company that's going to pay a claim. And this isn't a sympathy issue for an insurance company. You can roll whatever coverages you want in, and we'll price the coverage, and the Minnesotans will pay the price of that. We think it's sound public policy to have those exclusions there. So the reason the exclusions are in the policies, the reason they're upheld, is because of the concern and the problems with the moral hazard that's going to happen if you open up. For me, it'd be kind of like, should I be able to buy a liability policy and then sue myself? Can I be a plaintiff and a defendant in a single lawsuit? And I hope we'd all agree that's probably not a good idea if I'm the plaintiff and the defendant in that lawsuit. So the history of exclusions is extensive, and there's reasons why, sound reasons, sound public policy reasons why they're found in policies. Third, this is this whole issue of auto insurance. I really would like to just flat disagree. I think the analogy of auto insurance in Minnesota is just flat wrong. It's wrong. It's wrong for the following reasons. Is that the Minnesota courts today, and I could bring you multiple cases, Supreme Court cases, you can read the cases, today uphold family exclusions in auto policies above the minimum mandated limit. Or it's our no-fault law mandates, I think those of you on the committee or that are just reviewed by policies, our no-fault law mandates minimum liability coverage mandates. You can buy more, but today in Minnesota, many consumers have auto policies that they may buy $250,000, $500,000 of coverage, but that auto policy could well have a family exclusion that excludes coverage between family members for lawsuits above that minimum mandate. So why do they do that? Because the no-fault law mandates liability coverage for every driver on the road, and that's the reason that the court says we can't uphold it in its entirety because state law requires that every driver carry liability coverage, so everybody gets that coverage. But they're upheld, the exclusion amongst family members is upheld above that. So for those two reasons, it's just auto, it's just not, it's not the same analogy. We don't mandate boat insurance. We don't mandate homeowners insurance. We don't mandate umbrellas. We do mandate car insurance for everybody that's driving in. And for those reasons, and lastly, we really think that, I'd like to just to end with, consumers can buy family medical coverage today when they're buying their boat insurance, however, whatever vehicle they've got, they can purchase the coverage. So for us as an industry, we do oppose the bill. We think those consequences are significant, they're serious, they're widespread. You know, do you want to mandate coverage of people that have canoes and kayaks and small sailboats and a fishing boat with a 15 horsepower motor? We think the market today is serving them quite well. And the only states that do things differently, I guess I'll stop at that, Mr. Chairman, if there's an interest in kind of hearing about.
I think you should tell us the states that don't have, the three states that you've mentioned.
Yeah, well, there's three states that mandate liability coverage amongst boats, but all three states permit family exclusions. Two of the three that mandate it only apply to mandate to boats above 50 horsepower. So they've taken that.
So I asked you what three states.
And in three states, Connecticut has a statute that deals with the family exclusion that they do not permit it. And then there's regulations that are there. So the only statute in state is Connecticut. And then I think it's New Hampshire and Vermont have got bulletins. So they're not state statutes, but bulletins that basically have that same impact, Mr. Chairman. So those would be the.
Thank you.
The only states that are not in the rest of the pack that support and uphold family exclusions in these policies.
Mr. Slater, did I say that correctly?
Sather is fine.
Sather, okay.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, good afternoon. I'm Greg Sather. I'm the Executive Vice President of the Professional Insurance Agents of Minnesota. We're an association for independent insurance agents across this great state of Minnesota. I work for the agents that work with the insurance consumers every day, and I'm also an insurance agent too. I'm also a boat owner several times over. I've owned several boats in the past, and I still own several. And I'm also an avid water skier. And what happened is one of the things that I fear most when we go out. Boating is, or can be, inherently dangerous. But to go back to the author's example at the beginning of the committee hearing today, when his father jumped over the motor to dive into the water to help his brother, to think that the father, as an insured, could collect under his liability policy, basically suing himself, just doesn't make sense to me. In boating, we grew up boating. I boated a lot as a family. Went on vacations with the boat. I mean, we actually took the boat to our vacation destination. And never once would I ever think of suing my father, or, God forbid, my father suing me if something should go wrong. I think what's perfectly evident here is a lot of people don't understand how liability insurance works. And Bob did a good example of kind of laying the groundwork, and I think people really need to do a better job of learning what their policies say. Yes, you do get what you pay for, but I think you have an obligation to understand what you are paying for as well. Insurance agents work with the buying public every day, and they're there to help people understand what they're buying. They're there to help people choose what coverage they need to help best protect them in the situations they find themselves in. Agents want to help. They want to educate. All you have to do is ask. Insurance agents are also on the front line, so they care. When something is not working for one of their insureds, they want to know about it, and if something's not working, they'll usually be told about it. They're usually the first to hear, and from my conversations with agents, this has not been an issue. So I guess what I really want to say is insurance is actually pretty innovative. It changes as the needs of people change. And as that change is constantly occurring around us, insurance coverages adapt. If the insurance buying public really wants this, let the companies that are willing to provide it give it to them. But certainly don't mandate it. We oppose HF 476.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Representative Stevenson, why don't you come back to the testifying desk, and we'll open it up for comments and questions. Members, I better. You guys are going to have to keep your eyes open for a hand raised. Are there any questions or concerns? Comments? Oh, Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Johnson testified. I spared him from my question this year, but he could have guessed what my question is going to be, because I've asked him this question at least once a year for the last 16 years, and it usually involves when insurance companies bring forth a bill permitting them a certain latitude or permitting them to deny coverage in one way or another, some variation on that. And I was asking the same question. Is this going to reduce premiums for consumers? And every single time he answers the same way, we can't promise that. I mean, this isn't really about that. And yet he sat up there today guaranteeing that protecting our citizens more was going to increase costs. Absolutely. So, listen, if you're a company, if you're an insurance company, I get it. At the end of the day, it's your bottom line, and everyone needs to make a living. That's absolutely true, and I do not begrudge anyone that. However, I find it problematic when it's said that this will increase costs, when every other time insurance representatives sit at that table or a similar table in another committee room and try to claim the opposite when the shoe's on the other foot. I see that tray of cupcakes over there, but you can't have your cupcake and eat it too on this. So I dispute that heavily. I just wanted to make that point, Mr. Chair.
So that was a comment. Are there any questions? Oh, wait. Representative Cotisa Batun?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Stevenson, I think you potentially clarified this for me, but just to further clarify, and maybe Mr. Johnson could speak to it as well. I'm curious, when he was speaking about the third party and somebody sharing the household budget, what are the impacts on an adult child in the family? So, you know, you've grown up, you've gone to college, you've gotten married, you might have children of your own, you come home, go boating with your parents at the cabin, and something like this happens. They're no longer sharing a financial family budget because they have their own family and their own budget. Are they covered by the policy then because they would be potentially a third party, or how does that work?
So it's
Representative Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, Representative, it's going to depend on the specific language of the exclusion, but in almost all cases the exclusion is written to say that it's anyone who's related by blood or marriage to the insured party. And it's not anyone who's related by blood but under the age of 18, meaning that adult children would still be excluded even if they had their own household budget.
They already don't like their parents. Any further questions? Tabby? How do I pronounce it? Badly?
You murdered it.
There you go. That's my style.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, I've got one quick comment here, is that I'm lucky enough to have friends that have boats, so I don't have to have a boat, which is, in my opinion, the best way to do this. And I talked to all of them over the course of the last week or so about this, and to a person, everyone assumed that they had coverage in these types of situations, that everyone thought that this was, and then they went back and looked at their policy to realize that this is the exclusion also applies to them, and they were extremely frustrated and confused as to how this is happening in the state of Minnesota. So that's one comment, that this is not well known and understood in the marketplace as to what's going on. Second, this is a question for Representative Stevenson or whoever would best answer it. If this bill had been in place when Ms. Godfrey had the accident, what would have happened differently moving forward? How would this have affected, if something like this were to happen again and this bill is enacted, how would that happen differently?
Representative Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Tabke, if this bill had been enacted, the exclusion in Ms. Godfrey's husband's insurance policy, which prevented her from asserting a claim under that insurance policy because she was married to him, would not have been in place. And so she could have asserted a claim. Now, I think it's really important to note that there's a lot of other reasons why there are exclusions in insurance policies. For example, fraud, right? Or intentional acts. There's a lot of exclusions. And this bill doesn't affect any of them. So when we are talking about moral hazard and fraud, it's important to note that those operations are still in place. Those exclusions are still in place. It just means that her claim would have been treated just as it would have been had it occurred the year prior when she wasn't married to the boat owner.
Thank you.
Any more? Representative Tabke?
Nope, I'm good. Thank you for getting my name correct.
Representative Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And perhaps first a question. I had a question, but maybe now it's just a comment. I guess I'm a little confused by Mr. Johnson and Mr. Slather's comments. We had Mr. Johnson state the insurance market is serving the public well, followed by Mr. Slather saying that the public doesn't understand their policies, the public needs to learn, the public has an obligation to understand their policies, agents want to help. So with so much misunderstanding on the part of well-intentioned public in doing the right thing and buying an insurance policy to protect themselves and loved ones, with an industry that's saying that they're serving the public well, seems to be in conflict with one another. I don't know if Mr. Johnson or Mr. Sather wants to speak to that contradiction in the statements they made and what we're hearing from the general public in terms of what they feel is actually in their policies.
And members, I'm going to take this moment to tell you we have another bill up today, so at 3:15, I'm going to start cutting people off.
You can start now.
I could do that. I could. Mr. Johnson, would you care to come to the witness table?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Bob Johnson, I did hear the question, so just real briefly, I think the key point is the following, Representative, is that, A, on the whole issue of what do consumers understand about their policies, you know, we in our industry and the agents, we do our best. You know, these policies are written at the ninth grade reading level, as required by state law. Consumers in Minnesota are required to read their policies according to case law in Minnesota. They should have an obligation. So, you know, do we all read our policies? No. So I think it's this, that, you know, all you can do is, as if the agents and as the licensed professionals, as they're dealing with their customers, explain the situation, understand it, help them. And we're just saying there's room to improve on having people understand it. But that does not change for us the underlying issue of whether or not family exclusion should be part of these policies. They should be part of these policies because for the reasons that I articulated. And so I think there's room to improve the whole issue of what consumers know. We work on that every year. We pass a lot of laws about disclosures and what people get to information at the point of sale. And if there's more information that needs to be done there, we're totally willing to work on that issue of disclosures and what consumers know. But ultimately, people have to take the responsibility to pick it up and look at it and read the policy. It's written at a grade level, so as required by law, so that it can be read. And we need to do as good a job as we can. So that probably sounds, as you heard initially, I don't think it's contradictory. It's just acknowledging that there's room to improve, that we need to do more to help people understand, and continue at that effort. Keep doing that and give it our best shot. Keep doing that.
I'm glad it's my fault. Representative Carlson, did you have anything more to say?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a closing comment. With all due respect, Mr. Johnson, yes, I think there is lots of room for improvement.
Representative? Any other questions? Go ahead.
Representative Listigarge. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I
understand what you were saying, but I just thought it was real cavalier how you just said ninth grade reading level and it's the state law.
I understand, and it is state law. I get that.
Yeah.
I could make more comments, but these are number 200s, and the last time I read my insurance policy, I had to have 275s, and I still didn't understand it. So,
Mr. Chairman,
and Sister Vincent would probably roll over in her grave at ninth grade, at my ninth grade abilities.
Mr. Chairman, if I could just comment, I mean, I had no intention to be cavalier. I was just saying that in terms of how saying that in terms of explaining. Constructively, I worked to help pass that law with the legislature. I did, and so as an industry, we're part of the effort to pass that. And I'm sorry if it sounded cavalier; it was not intended to be that. It was just trying to help bring to the table what I think is relevant in terms of how consumers.
Any other questions? We have a few amendments that we have to get through, so let's go after those. Let's go with A3. Where are they? Oh, okay. A3. Who's claiming the A3 amendment?
Mr. Chair, that's mine. I'm wondering if we could do it at the end. I mean, it doesn't matter. You're prerogative. But I do have two other amendments, A6 and A5.
Okay.
Do the D1 if you want.
Get right to it. Again, we have the room for later tonight, so go with A5.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'd like to make a motion to I'd like to move the A5 amendment.
So move. Please explain it.
Thank you. So the one of the things. Thank you, Representative Stevenson, for bringing the bill up. And I've heard lots of comments, common sense, and it's a horrible situation that got you here. There's no question. I'm not trying to pit any parties against anybody else. I'm trying to look at the fact that you have to put good policy in front of Minnesotans, and we have to pass that. What I've heard, and as I've researched this and spent a lot more on insurance law than getting to know Chapter 60 way better than I wanted to, but as I looked at this, I thought, what we keep hearing is about the victims and the families and making sure that the award goes to the right place. And so what I would like to offer up is that let's put the award there. Let's put a cap on the contingency fees, that one-fifth of those can go to the legal firm or the legal team, and that four-fifths of it goes to where it should be, which is the victims and the families. So I don't think this could be a contentious amendment. I think it actually makes a lot of sense, and I think that it would be something we could go back and say we're proud of to our constituents.
Representative Stevenson, any comment?
Mr. Chair, Representative Krisha, I appreciate your effort to be constructive. I do oppose A5 amendment and would ask members to vote against it. I think it's important for people to be able to hire the attorney of their choice, and I don't think this is helping consumers. So.
Any comments or questions?
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess you have the votes. This is going to go to other committees. I guess if we want to award the trial attorneys, I'd ask for a roll call at this time.
Mr. Chair.
So roll call vote? Well,
are we doing the roll call right now, Mr. Chair?
Or? Roll call.
I have a comment, Mr. Chair.
Go right ahead, Mr.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Chair. Representative Krisha, every time...
Krisha.
Every time one of you folks starts talking about, let's make sure that the people who are looking out for injured folks are not getting paid, it makes me wonder. If you've taken a salary to do this job, the insurance folks come up here to the table and say they just want to help people. I bet they get paid for their job, too. I'm pretty sure. I mean, I don't think they're sitting up there for free. And I know the trial attorneys that I personally observed are some of the only folks that are keeping people safe. It's the only and if one of your kids is in this situation, or your spouses, and God forbid you have to be in a position where you got to hire an attorney, I'm willing to bet you're going to want a good attorney who's going to get paid for the work they do. So I just find it really too bad that there's a way that amendments can be drafted to shortchange folks who are really trying to. And yes, they get paid while they do it. But when someone gets injured, who's holding people accountable? It's these folks. It's the attorneys that come up here and testify. So, no, I don't think this is an easy amendment. I think it's an easy no vote. I'm glad you asked for a roll call because I'm going to be proud to vote no.
Any other comments? Seeing none, would the assistant take the roll?
Halverson?
No.
Stevenson?
No.
O'Driscoll?
Yes.
Carlson?
No.
Davids?
Yes.
Dean?
No.
Elkins?
No.
Garofalo? Haley?
Yes.
Howard?
No.
Katisa Watun? No. Krisha?
Yes.
Lesh?
No.
Lislegard? Mahoney?
No.
O'Neill?
Yes.
Richardson?
No.
Swazinski?
Yes. The gentleman from Lyon.
Tapke?
No, Kim.
Tease?
Yes.
I got your name easy.
Yes. That's why you make the big bucks,
Mahoney. A bunch of Polish friends. Members, the amendment fails. 12 nays and 7 ayes. Who has, do you have A6?
I have the A6 and the A3, Mr. Chair.
You're going for all sorts of them today.
Trying to do good work, Mr. Chair.
All right. Would you like to present your amendment and then we can vote it down?
I'd like to move the A6 amendment, Mr. Chair.
Go right ahead, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And while I appreciate the comments of my colleague, Representative Lesh, I can do without the lecture. I'm fine. I'm really am just trying to get to good policy. And one of the things that I'll offer here is we talked about limits and kind of putting the guardrails around what can happen in cancellations. And one of the comments I heard was that whenever insurance companies come up here and try to take those provisions away, they say, you know, it's in the best interest. I'm actually going the other way. With this, there, as I understand the statutes, there are no limits on what can be done in a cancellation. So this, and I think of my kids too. As my kids are getting older and they've all gone through their boat safety and they're driving, I'm worried about the other boaters. I'm worried, are they impaired? Are they qualified? Is the boat they're driving mechanically sound? All of which we've heard we're trying to make conform with auto policies. So what this amendment simply does is it starts to put those guardrails around the consumer protections to say, here's the reasons your policy could be canceled, and we don't want impaired boaters out there. We don't want folks out there with mental conditions like epilepsy, same things on the road. We don't want folks out there that are in an unsafe watercraft that could cause damage and create really bad situations. So with that, that's all I'm trying to do here. In fact, you'll see I'm not trying to help out anybody. I'm just trying to make this better for the consumer. And I guess we've set the tone, so I'll ask for a roll call on this right away, Mr. Chair.
And would you care to comment, Representative Stevenson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, I'm opposed to this amendment, would ask members to vote against it. I don't believe that the amendment accomplishes what Representative Kreisha is seeking to have happen, if for no other reason that you can see that in the first paragraph it says the reason for cancellation must be stated in the policy and may include but is not limited to, which means that they can say whatever they want to cancel the policy, which is the current state of the law. So I don't think that this amendment is productive, and I would oppose it.
Is there any questions or comments on the amendment? Seeing none, I will call for the roll call.
Halverson?
No.
Stevenson?
No.
O'Driscoll?
Yes.
Carlson?
No.
Davids?
Yes.
Dean?
No.
Elkins?
No.
Garofalo? Haley?
Yes.
Howard?
No.
Katusa Watoon?
No.
Kreisha?
Yes.
Lesh?
No.
Lislegard?
No.
Mahoney?
No.
O'Neill?
Yes.
Richardson?
No.
Swizinski?
Yes.
Tapke?
No.
Tease.
It's Tice.
Tice. Tice.
Members, I want us all to go home and do our homework and learn the names and the pronunciations of all the names of the committee members.
That'll be a quiz when?
May 23rd. Members, the amendment fails on a 12-7 vote.
We're getting closer.
Not much. There is the A4.
Or A3.
Or would you like to directly go to the delete all and get this done with? No? Oh, you're going to go for a couple of votes. All right, the A4. Who has the A4?
Mr. Chair, I do. I know that Representative Kreisha said he had the A3 as well. I don't know if that's... It doesn't matter. We're going to do them all today. So very quickly, the A4 amendment, which I do move before the committee for consideration, just simply holds the principle of indemnity in place in the state of Minnesota. And so if there isn't issues of double indemnity where an individual may attempt to collect from multiple sources, it just holds it to the individual policy. So with that, Mr. Chair, I ask for a yes vote. And a roll call vote, too, please, Mr. Chair.
Representative Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I do oppose the A4 amendment. Minnesota already has a collateral source law. It's been statute since 1986. That's MnSTAT 548-251. If anyone wants to look up, I'd ask for a no vote.
Thank you. Any comments or questions? Seeing none. One more roll call.
Halverson?
No.
Stevenson?
No.
O'Driscoll?
Yes.
Carlson?
No.
Davids?
Yes.
Dean?
No.
Elkins?
No.
Garofalo? Haley?
Yes.
Howard?
No.
Katusa Watoon?
No.
Kreisha?
Yes.
Lesh?
No.
Lislegard?
No.
Mahoney?
No.
O'Neill?
Yes.
Richardson?
No.
Swizinski?
Yes.
Tapke?
No.
Tyes?
Yes.
Thank you. Members, the amendment fails on a 12-7 vote. So back to the A3. We'll keep going through this. The A3 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move the A3 amendment. And before I do that, we had heard testimony that this is like the auto insurance. I'm wondering if I could ask one question to the bill author, Mr. Chair.
You certainly can.
You gave the analogy, and I'm truly trying to understand all this. You gave the analogy of your story, your father and the telling, standing on the sun deck. I'm not familiar with that Forester boat. Is that the top deck above the motor?
Mr. Chair, Representative Crescia, if I'm understanding what you're asking, yes. So it's on the back of the boat. There's a area where you can lay out in the sun. It's above where the motor the engine would be.
And that's where he was standing.
So the propeller sticks out. He was like crouched. Yeah.
Okay. The reason I bring that up, Mr. Chair, I think we have to be careful, because if the analogy goes further, that's like the analogy of standing on the back of a pickup truck. And, I mean, I want to make sure we do this right. If we're going to do this, let's talk through the hard policy and let's get this right. But let's make sure the analogies are correct. I would never have someone standing on the back of a pickup truck or the roof of the car while it's moving. And so I bring that up. And the reason I say that, I'm really trying to get us to a spot where let's make sure this policy is right. We're asking this to go to the General Register. There's a lot of questions that have come up. Is this common sense? Your words were the rates could go up, but I doubt it. We just don't know. So this amendment does this. Let's put this in the hands of an advisory group directed by the Department of Commerce to look at it, come back to the legislature with recommendations, and say, this is all the information we've uncovered. The Department of Commerce is doing it. You bring in folks that can talk through this, and I've included on here, you know, it's not a select group. It's a very broad group. We've got Insurance Federation, we have Medical Association, we have defense lawyers. If we're not going to limit contingency fees, fine, then let's talk about this and let's get to the right spot. I actually think this is a very common sense amendment. If you want to take it as a friendly amendment, there's no need to roll call it. I'll leave that up to you. Otherwise, I guess I'll just roll call it. But I really am offering this as an olive branch to say, why not slow the process down and get it right versus run it through and get it to the General Register?
Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Crescia, my dad would not be surprised to find that he was acting irresponsibly. I think would be the first or the last time. But as to the amendment, I do oppose the amendment because I think it's just kicking the can down the road. As was discussed at some length, this bill was introduced last year. There's been ample opportunity to study and talk about it and think about it, and I think the time is ripe for action. So I'd ask the members to vote against the A3 amendment.
Any comments or questions? The chair will make a comment. I personally have seen so many advisory groups that have either failed to meet or come up with a recommendation and the legislature just ignores them. I'm not entirely sure what another advisory council would do, so I would be voting no. Did you have another comment?
I'll wait till you finish, Mr. Chair.
Did you have a final comment?
I did. I'll wait till you.
Yeah. No, I'm done.
Okay. I would just add that. I would offer to this. We have plenty of time. You could put this amendment on. You could go to the next committee. You have the votes. You could strip it out, if so you please. Give the members of this committee that I've talked to saying we're not quite sure a little bit of chance just to review it and give it peace in the valley to go forward. This can come off at any time. This can come off on the House floor. You have way more votes than you're ever going to need to get what you're trying to accomplish. But members, have a little bit more information before you make that vote. That's all I'm asking for here. I think it's a reasonable request. I'll leave it to that. So with that, I'll ask if you'd like to take it as a friendly amendment. Otherwise, I'll ask for a roll call.
Representative Stevens.
I would not take it as a friendly amendment.
I'll ask for a roll call, Mr.
Roll call has been called for.
Halverson.
No.
Stevenson.
No.
O'Driscoll.
Yes.
Carlson.
No.
Davids.
Yes.
Dean.
No.
Elkins.
Yes.
Garofalo. Haley.
Yes.
Howard.
No.
Katoza Watun.
No.
Kreisha.
Yes.
Lesh.
No.
Lislegard.
No.
Mahoney.
No.
O'Neill.
Yes.
Richardson.
No.
Swazinski.
Yes.
Tabke.
No.
Ties.
Yes.
Members, the amendment fails on 11 to 8.
We're getting there.
Yeah, now you're making improvements. Members, we have one amendment to this bill left. It's the DE1. I believe.
I'll take it.
That's yours?
Sure.
And Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Chair Mahoney. I appreciate that. I would like to move the DE1. Mullery, yeah. The DE1 in front of the committee. You know, just listening to the testimony, and just want to appreciate Ms. Godfrey for your testimony. You know, it seems like a kind of a recurring theme that we heard over and over with the testifiers and just individuals in the committee, even Representative Stevenson. And when just visiting with friends after the accident, it's really knowledge is power. That's one of the things that I really discovered from this testimony you heard today, and just as this bill moves forward, that, well, I didn't know, or I really wish if I would, or I would gladly pay the extra cash for this this coverage. And essentially what this does, kind of because we, as through case law, we know that general family exclusions are allowed under law, through case law, and instead of prohibiting the family exclusion, this amendment simply permits the family exclusion only if proper disclosure is given to the insured. When a new policy is issued or a policy is renewed, insurers must provide the policyholder with the following written electronic notice if their policy includes a family exclusion. So that way folks will know whether or not they have this particular coverage, and so that they can make, because this product is available in the market. And I think that's what we really need to be moving forward, is that knowledge is power. And you know, essentially says this policy does not provide liability protection or reduce reliability protection for bodily injury to an insured caused by an insured. So with that, I think, you know, we had a lot of yeses and a lot of noes today, and I'm really hoping that this amendment can kind of bring those yeses and noes for best public policies move forward. And I'd ask for a roll call, and I'd ask folks to vote yes.
Representative Stevenson, any comments?
Mr. Chair, I oppose the DE amendment, would ask members to vote against it. I would comment that this turns the bill directly on its head. Minnesota law right now is silent as to whether you can have a family exclusion. Companies just do it. But if you look on Subdivision 3, it says that family exclusions are now permitted. So instead of making them prohibited, it expressly allows them. So it does exactly the opposite of what the intention of the bill is. And I don't believe the disclosure provision will accomplish much. We had some extensive discussion about from Mr. Johnson and others about how disclosure is already built into Minnesota law and how policies have to be written at a ninth grade level. I don't believe that the disclosure provision will accomplish anything. I'd ask members to vote against the DE amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then, you know, just to just reiterate, the exclusion would be prohibited if there is not disclosure, so that you cannot have an exclusion for family unless the disclosure is given. So essentially it's a fail-safe for your family, for yourself, for your insured. And I think at the end of the day, that's what this Representative Stevenson's ultimate goal is, that people have the knowledge that they have the coverage that they think they have. And I think this amendment absolutely does that, but does not potentially impact families and impact people insured across the state.
Any further questions? Any further questions or comments? Seeing none. You did call for a roll call?
Yes, sir.
Roll call will be taken.
Halverson?
No.
Stevenson?
No.
O'Driscoll?
Yes.
Carlson?
No.
Davids?
Yes.
Dean?
No.
Elkins?
No.
Garofalo? Haley?
Yes.
Howard?
No.
Katiza Watun?
No.
Kreisha?
Yes.
Lesh?
No.
Lislegard?
No.
Mahoney?
No.
O'Neill?
Yes.
Richardson?
No.
Swazinski?
Yes.
Tabke?
No.
Ties?
Yes.
Members, I'm sad to say you're losing ground. The amendment fails on a 12-7 vote. Back to the original bill. Any final questions, final comments? Representative O'Driscoll.
Mr. Chair, I'd just like a roll call, please.
Roll call has been called. More paper. The Aaron Rangers are happy.
Roll call vote on House File 476. Halverson?
Aye.
Stevenson?
Aye.
O'Driscoll?
No.
Carlson?
Yes.
Davids?
No.
Dean?
Yes.
Elkins?
Yes.
Garofalo? Haley?
No.
Howard?
Yes.
Katiza Watoon?
Yes.
Kreisha?
No.
Lesh?
Aye.
Lislegard?
Yes.
Mahoney?
Aye.
O'Neill?
No.
Richardson?
Yes.
Szczesinski?
No.
Tapke?
Yes.
Ties?
No.
Mr. Representative Stevenson, your bill is on its way to the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
That's fine, man. I'm good at that. I don't care. You can just wander around there.
We should save the drink.
No, Matt. Where are you? No, I can get out of your way. Happy to. There's a TV camera on me somewhere around here, I can tell.
Oh, okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Representative Davids.
I'll move the minutes of February 6th.
Representative Davids has moved the minutes from the last meeting. Is there any discussion to the minutes? Representative Richardson?
I believe there's a typo on the minutes. One of the Cammie Lavelle, I think it should be chronic pain patient, but.
And I assume Representative Davids accepts that correction.
I would incorporate that as friendly.
Yeah. Any further discussion to the minutes? Seeing none, all in favor of approving the minutes?
Aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? And that motion prevails. The minutes are approved. I want to take a moment to thank Chair Mahoney for filling in there when we were down. I appreciate that. And we'll now move on to the next item on the agenda, which is House File 629. Chair Halverson, do you want to make a motion to
bring your Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House File 629 be referred to Ways and Means.
Representative Halverson moves to re-refer to Ways and Means. And Representative Halverson, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House File 629 is a bill to extend Minnesota's Premium Security Act reinsurance for up to 3 years. It does not bring any new money to the table. It uses what is currently left over from the current reinsurance plan and does not require us as a state to go back to the federal government and request a 1332 waiver as we do with all other types of health care reform. That's significant because the federal government has been notoriously unpredictable when it comes to state waivers, and we are in a position as a state where Minnesotans are looking for stability with regard to their health insurance premiums in the individual market. This is a short-term fix. It was a short-term fix when it was introduced and passed in the last legislative session, and we are about to fall off a cliff if we do not extend it. That cliff will lead to higher insurance premiums in the individual market. It will lead to more Minnesotans being uninsured. It will therefore, I believe, prevent us from being able to do comprehensive, smart, and thoughtful long-term health care reform that Minnesotans are so desperately asking for. Anybody who was at the doors this summer, and we all were in super great shape, if you walk my district because there's a lot of hills, we heard that Minnesotans are looking for stability. They want to know that their health care is going to be there for them and that they're going to be able to afford it. This is one small short-term and temporary measure that allows Minnesotans to continue to participate in the individual market while we as policymakers can take a look at more comprehensive and long-term health care reform. With that, I would appreciate your support and welcome any testifiers.
Thank you, Chair Alverson. I believe we do have a number of testifiers who have signed up. I would ask if Catherine Kmit could come up and testify at this time.
And Mr. Chair?
Yes, Chair Alverson.
And while Ms. Kmit is coming forward, looks like we have six people who have signed up to testify, and I think that maybe we should look at, you know, making sure that nobody goes over time. So thank you.
Thank you,
making sure everybody gets their say.
We'll do that. Thank you, Ms. Kmit.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Catherine Kmit, and I represent the Minnesota Council of Health Plans. The council is the trade association that represents Minnesota's seven nonprofit health plans. I brought, maybe the page could distribute this, I brought just a couple of handouts for you. This is some of the slides from the presentation that I gave a couple of weeks ago, just to refresh your memory about, specifically about reinsurance, and then just a one-pager about the reinsurance program. Again, thanks for the opportunity to testify. We strongly support House File 629. Minnesota's reinsurance program was created to lower premiums for people buying insurance on their own by paying a portion of the high medical bills, a cost that otherwise must be built into the premiums. Again, I want to thank you, members of the committee who were here, for your help 2 years ago. The program has been a resounding success. According to the Minnesota Department of Commerce, the reinsurance program has resulted in lowering premiums on average by 20% in calendar year 2018, and 20% again in calendar year 2019. The fact is, Minnesota's state reinsurance program has worked. For people who purchase coverage on their own through the individual market, the reinsurance program has made a real difference in helping them to continue to afford coverage. Everyone in the individual market, that is everyone, has benefited from lower health insurance premiums as a result of the state reinsurance program. Based on preliminary numbers for calendar year 2018, we anticipate you will not have to appropriate more money to extend the program. There will be leftover state reinsurance funds that can be used. Therefore, we strongly recommend using these leftover funds for their original purpose and extend the state reinsurance program across the remaining 3 years of the federal waiver. Again, this bill does not appropriate or use any new state money, but it does enable Minnesota to access additional federal dollars to stabilize the market for 2020, 2021, and 2022. By extending the leftover funds for the remainder of the federal waiver, the state can draw down federal funding. It is appropriate for Minnesota to leverage these federal dollars. For all of this to help your constituents, passage of this legislation is needed quickly. Minnesota law requires health plans to file products and rates soon for calendar year 2020. In fact, proposed rates will be submitted to the Department of Commerce in about 6 or 7 weeks. With reinsurance, rates will be set higher. Excuse me. Without reinsurance, rates will be set higher to pay all the medical bills. Extending the state reinsurance program can act as a bridge to give the legislature and the Walz administration time to prepare for the next phase of health care reform. We have a tradition in Minnesota as an innovator, and reinsurance is the latest example, with our approach being copied in other states. Hopefully, with more time, we can work together to develop new recommendations for Minnesotans on how to make health insurance coverage affordable and accessible for more people. Extending the reinsurance program helps to keep the individual market stable for the next several years without additional budget impact. This is important so Minnesotans can continue to afford buying insurance on their own. However, it doesn't solve the critical problem of increasingly expensive health care. But it does provide some stability and certainty for people looking to get coverage on their own. We urge your support for this bill. Thank you for the opportunity to testify, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Schmidt. We do have, that was the last of the authors testifiers. We do have a number of members of the public who wish to testify. The committee is going to take up Chair Halverson's suggestion and ask members of the public who are testifying to limit their remarks to 2 minutes, a minute and 30 seconds, so 30 seconds remaining. Our committee administrator will alert the testifier. So with that, if Laura Sales is here.
Mr. Chair.
Chair Halverson.
Thank you. While Ms. Sales is coming down, I missed a couple of comments, actually, in my opening comments, if I may just refer back to the bill. While I said this is an extension of a program that's in place, there actually are some additions that I've put into this particular legislation around reporting that we get from the health plans to provide more transparency and accountability with regard to how our health our dollars are spent. The other thing that I neglected to mention is that reinsurance is not new to healthcare. We only know about it because the federal government stopped providing it, and we got to see what happens when an individual, our individual market, is left completely without any backdoor support. And so that resulted in premium increases 50, 60, 70%. And so reinsurance is not new to our health insurance. It's one of those invisible mechanisms that have been engaged for many years with regard to stabilizing our health care markets, but because the federal government stopped providing it, the state had to step up. That's the only thing I wanted to add. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Halverson. Ms. Sales.
Representative Halverson, members of the committee, my name is Laura Sales, and I'm a lobbyist for the Minnesota Nurses Association. We are a labor union of about 22,000 bedside nurses that live and work all over Minnesota and parts of Iowa and Wisconsin. We are here to testify in opposition to House File 629, the bill that would extend the funding for the Minnesota Premium Security Plan. MNA was opposed to the Minnesota Premium Security Plan when it was first passed. In 2017, we asked the legislature to carefully consider if reinsurance was the right approach to address rising premiums and deductibles and shrinking provider networks. Again, from 2017, our view was that while some are wary of government involvement in health care, reinsurance is a major government program. The reinsurance program was designed for the state to pay health companies for high-cost claims, but in return, there was no guarantee the insurance companies would offer affordable premiums, reasonable deductibles, and comprehensive provider networks. The state was proposing to spend up to $542 million to prop up a market made up of about 4% of Minnesotans who purchase individual coverage for themselves and their families. We support the intent to help those people, but we would have preferred to do it in a sustainable way, not this expensive effort to get them into insurance they might not be able to use. In 2018, the early impacts of the reinsurance program were seen when the 2019 rates for the individual market were released. In the individual market, rates were slated to decrease, but we wonder whether it's an actual decrease or a smaller increase than anticipated if the reinsurance program were not in place. According to the information released by the Department of Commerce, these were average changes, and the actual rate change that consumer would experience in 2019 could vary depending on factors like the specific plan choice, geographic rating area, and age. In addition, reinsurance was one of the only one of the factors health plans cited for this average rate decrease. The other factors included a higher percentage of healthy, less costly enrollees than in the recent past, resulting in lower utilization of medical services and prescription drugs, and lower federal taxes and assessments than required in the previous year, prior year.
Ms. Sales, if you could wrap up your remarks.
Sure. Our objections remain the same in 2019 as they were in 2017. Reinsurance is not the game changer in the broader push to control healthcare spending, so we oppose the bill.
Thank you, Ms. Sales, and thank you for understanding our time limitations today. The next testifier is Bentley Graves. Thank you, Mr. Graves. You may proceed. State your name for the record, and then you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Bentley Graves. I'm with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. The Minnesota Chamber represents 2,300 members, member employers across the state, all sizes of business, all types of businesses and industry, and all over the state. And those 2,300 employers employ about 500,000 Minnesotans. You know, a lot of folks have asked, as I've talked to some of you, about reinsurance, why the business community cares what happens in the individual market, since so many of our members offer their employees group products. But the individual market is first and foremost where entrepreneurs and self-employed folks go for insurance, but increasingly it's also a place where very small employers go with their employees to find coverage for themselves and their families. I'd hope to be joined today by one of those very small employers, a member of ours, a member of our board, Inger Christensen, who owns a translation firm, has seven employees, and buys coverage for herself and her son in the individual market, and also helps her employees buy coverage in the individual market. She had planned to come here and tell you about the positive impact that reinsurance has had on her ability and her employees' ability to purchase insurance for themselves and their families, but wasn't able to make it due to the weather. But nevertheless, I wanted to reinforce that perspective for you as you consider this legislation today. We strongly support extension of the reinsurance program. We believe it's done exactly what it was intended to do, and it has indeed provided a good bit of relief to those folks that are in the individual market. So I would ask your support and would happy to answer any questions. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Mr. Graves. Next, we have Amanda Otero. Thank you, Mr. Otero. Please state your name, and then you may proceed.
Mr. Chair and committee members, my name is Amanda Otero, and I'm here today on behalf of Take Action Minnesota. We're a grassroots organization representing 55,000 Minnesotans across the state and 22 organizational members. We advocate for racial, gender, and economic justice at the local, state, and federal level. I'm here today to raise our concerns about this bill. This morning, we hosted a press conference on healthcare affordability where we released the results of a poll by Altrum's Healthcare Value Hub that found that 47% of Minnesotans struggled to afford high healthcare costs this past year. That's almost half of us who reported struggles, including going uninsured, delaying or forgoing care, or going into debt or skipping other bills to pay for care. While I understand that this bill is an attempt to respond to these needs, this is the situation facing Minnesotans now with reinsurance. Reinsurance has given a lot of state dollars directly to plans and has only resulted in lower than they might have been premiums for a very small number of people, most of whom are still in very high deductible plans. Here's what life with reinsurance looks like for some Minnesotans. A 50-year-old couple in Rochester with a 17-year-old child earning $85,000 a year doesn't qualify for a tax credit as they're just over the 400% FPL cutoff. With reinsurance, the cheapest qualified health plan they can buy with less than an $11,000 deductible is $1,737 per month with a $4,400 deductible. The cheapest plan they can buy, period, is $1,485 per month with a $13,700 deductible. 20% more in premiums might break the bank, but what are the chances it's not already broken for this family? This example, and countless others like it, beg the question, for the amount of relief that we're giving insurance companies, are we getting enough relief for Minnesotans? The premise behind this bill is that we can't afford not to do this. We're wondering if we can afford to do it. Long-term solutions include a Minnesota Care buy-in, but in the short term, we need a solution that makes the health care we've got actually affordable for Minnesotans to use. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Otero. The next testifier is Bob Stein.
Mr. Chair.
Please state your name and then you may proceed.
Committee members, my name is Marie Bell. I'm an independent insurance agent and I'm the president of the Minnesota Association of Health Underwriters, representing health insurance brokers and agents across the state of Minnesota.
Mr. Chair and committee members, good afternoon. My name is Bob Stein, and I'm an independent insurance agent serving individual small employer customers here in Twin Cities and all over the state of Minnesota. We are here today representing the Agents Coalition, which includes the four professional agent associations in Minnesota, including the Minnesota Association of Health Underwriters, National Association of Insurance and Financial Advisors, professional insurance agents, and independent insurance agents. Collectively, we represent over 54,000 licensed insurance agents in Minnesota and their employees. As such, we work closely with both group and individual market consumers on a daily basis. The individual marketplace is not only where individuals and their families get coverage when they do not have access to employer-sponsored coverage, it is where entrepreneurs get their coverage when they start a new business, and it is also relied upon by individuals between jobs and early retirees.
Due to problems with how the Affordable Care Act was impacting the individual market, carriers were leaving the individual market and consumers were getting headline-making premium increases. We supported the creation of this plan 2 years ago, and we are here to report back to you that the premium security plan that you passed in 2017 is working. According to the Minnesota Department of Commerce, this plan resulted in premiums being 20% lower in 2018 than without the plan. Additionally, premiums dropped up to 27% for 2019. After several years of enormous price increases, policyholders clearly appreciate the impact of the program, even those who are not aware exactly how it works.
And to wrap up, the money that goes to the insurance companies just goes towards claims. It does not go to overhead. It's not reimbursed. It's only reimbursed for claims only. So it's not going to overhead or network or anything that type of thing. So we ask you to support Representative Halverson's House File 629.
Thank you very much. The next testifier is James Canning. Doing questions at the end of the testimony.
Good afternoon. I'm James Connie, and I'm here to speak against the bill. I'm a dairy farmer in southwestern Minnesota. I'm not a professional lobbyist. And I'm not paid to be here. I'm used to that. I'm a farmer, okay? And as such, I speak from my values. And I think it's very important that we look at what we're looking at for our values here in this bill. When we think about the future, we want to speak from our core values and beliefs. And what I'm reading from is something we've done from Land Stewardship Project, which I've been active in as a member, where we got from our members their ideas about what we should be doing in Minnesota. And I think as we look around, our local businesses are struggling, and we see that investment in our communities are dropping, and the abandoned storefronts in rural Minnesota are just an eyesore. And I think that when you look at everything out there, we are losing the battle. Going forward, we need a high-quality healthcare system that takes care of everyone and frees us to pursue our meaningful lives. As a dairy farmer and as a farmer whose next generation is taking on the farm, which is not the usual trend in a small-scale family farm. I got a daughter and son-in-law taking over the farm. They cannot do this without health care, pure and simple. But is the health care system working? And that's where my story comes in, is that last year I got really sick, and I thought I had pretty decent insurance because, hey, I had a pre-existing condition, and all of a sudden now I've got insurance that covers the pre-existing condition. And it got to the point where I needed the treatment that the insurance should cover. But I found out that this is not true, that just because you think you have the coverage doesn't mean you necessarily have the coverage, just as the voters find out, I guess.
Mr. Connie, if you could wrap up your comments,
yes,
please.
Yes, I will go forward with it. But the point here is that my story is such that insurance isn't a system that is necessarily working, that reinsurance is supporting a system that is not necessarily working, and that we need to look forward to something that will work in the future without wasting the state dollars that we're doing with the reinsurance business.
Thank you, Mr. Connie. I think we need to leave it at that now. Thank you, sir. And our last public testifier is Mike Hickey.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I'm Mike Hickey with the National Federation of Independent Business. We're the state's major small business group with about 10,000 members. We have a significant number of members who are in this market. I just want to thank Representative Helverson for bringing this important bill forward and continuing on with this program for three more years. We have a federal waiver for three more years, and we need to take advantage of that. And this is the exact thing that needs to be done at this time. So I want to thank you. I want to thank Representative Davids for all his work on this issue. Back in 2017, the market was an absolute crisis. We enacted the 27 bill. We had a rebate also involved with that. That was desperately needed. But people have really been burned by the insurance law changes over recent years and have had dramatic increases, you know, from talking to constituents who are stuck in this market, have had to suffer high deductibles and to the point where your insurance is almost rendered useless just to try to bring the price down a bit. You're only going to use your insurance rarely if you have a $5,000 or $10,000 deductible. It almost makes your insurance worthless. So we really need to do this. We need to go forward with this and to continue to rehab this market. And it was very good news to see that rates in general have gone down as much as they have. So I think it has worked and that we need to go forward with it.
Thank you, Mr. Hickey. And this, that was the end of the public testimony. I think now if Chair Halverson will perhaps answer questions from the committee. Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a couple of points. First of all, I handed out this handout here that says Davids on it. Go past the first sheet there. And it's a compilation of comments from our United States Senator, Amy Klobuchar, who says that people are interested in bringing premiums down like Minnesota has done with reinsurance at the state level. She said, we need to do this at the national level. Just go through. I mean, Senator Klobuchar is right on these issues. A quick comment on Amanda Oturo's comments. She was describing Obamacare. She was not describing House File 629. And members, we have to remember premiums are expensive because health care is expensive. I really haven't seen any movement this session to move forward to address the issue of cost, but that's not for today. I do want to thank Chair Halverson for carrying this bill with the extra reporting and so forth. We have, I think we've done the best we could on this. So Chair Halverson, I thank you so much.
Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess my concern is this, the level of this amount of money to put into a private industry as price supports for an insurance market is something that typically conservatives hate. Now I know Chair Davids, you're not a purist free marketeer, so I get that's fair, but
I'm a moderately liberal conservative.
Thank you. I was wondering what that was, so I'm going to use that from now on. So I understand you can carry this with a straight face, and that's fine. But folks came up here at the table, and they sat there and said, well, this is we got to do this kind of socialist price supports for a private industry because of the ACA. Their prices were skyrocketing before the ACA. That's why they passed the ACA. To try to get a handle on it. Now, you can argue that the ACA, did it do good for that or bad for that, but you certainly can't say it made things worse, which is the claim that's trying to be made that somehow justifies socialist price supports for a private industry like an insurance industry. I cannot figure out what reinsurance is. I mean, do we have reinsurance? Or are we going to have, like, reinsurance on top of that? Like, I would think that you get your actuaries in there, you figure out what it costs, and then you factor that in on the basis of the cost, and it goes up. And I think that's correct. What Representative David said is that the prices are high because healthcare costs are high, which is a fair point, but I still don't understand why we're doing reinsurance. It's like putting on a flak jacket to walk through a minefield. It doesn't seem like it's going to have that great of an effect other than delaying the inevitable, and I'm not sure it's had the effect that the industry suggests that it would. Maybe I'm in the minority on that. I certainly don't want to be against, you know, our favorite candidate for president, Representative Davins, Amy Klobuchar, is on this, right? So, but I'm still a little bit confused about it. This is my first year on the Commerce Committee, so hopefully maybe I'll learn a little bit more about it. But I still don't understand what the point is of reinsurance when you should be able to, like, fix the underlying problem rather than put a layer on top of it. That's all, Mr. Chair.
Representative Driscoll.
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure if we're done. I just had some procedural things I wanted to take just before we were done here. I don't know if there's any other member questions or...
There is one other member.
Yeah, just circle back to me if you would at the end. That's fine. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm wondering if Mr. Connie would come back up. I'm just wondering if you'd come back up to test first name.
Sure.
Did I pronounce it right, Mr. Connie?
Yes, you sure did.
And I'm just wondering, Mr. Chair, Mr. Connie, how much longer did you have in your testimony? You came from a long ways away. Everybody else was here, paid lobbyists. And I think too often we're just shutting down the public. If you have 5 minutes, I'd love to hear the rest of your presentation and make sure that we're hearing from the public that travels the furthest. I don't believe anybody has this room after we do. Mr. Chair, I'll leave it to you. But
I'm from 16B, which is right next to Chris's 16A out there. So
today is an 8-hour drive.
Eight-hour drive in the weather.
I came in yesterday to make sure I could be here.
Okay.
I stayed overnight to make sure I could be here today. And that's a case where I've got a couple minutes left in my testimony. I really appreciate to be able to
So, when,
give
Mr.
That.
Chair, I would ask for the indulgence to let him finish his testimony.
Representative Kreisha, I think that given that we are now just a few minutes over 4 o'clock, we have one person left, I think that's okay for a couple more minutes for Mr. Connie.
Okay. Thank you very much. I really appreciate the indulgence that I get the chance to talk about what it meant to me to basically have the insurance in place but then not be able to use it. It's a case where I went to the hospital going in there with the idea that everything would be covered. And they treated me and then sent me to the specialist. I came down to the University of Minnesota. I'm trying to make this quick. And we went through tests and stuff for a couple of months, and they scheduled surgery. And 30 hours before I was going to surgery, I get a call from the hospital saying, this might not be covered by your insurance company because some paperwork wasn't done from the hospital through your specialist back to the U. And at that point, it was like, I had to make a decision. Do I go ahead, risk getting a $20,000 additional deductible that I'd have to pay out of pocket? Or it's a case where I go to the next year and then take my deductible and copay again for the next year. I decided to risk going ahead with it. I really needed it. I did it. And I think that the lesson we need to learn here is that just because you have the policy in place, just because the reinsurance is in place, doesn't mean you have the coverage. We need to look at the value for the people. Is the public good being served by the public dollars? And just one last point. My granddaughter talked to me about what it was like to get put off. And this is what we've been doing to health care for a long time here, is that I come home and say, we're going to do it tomorrow, okay? And the next day I come back, and she say, well, it's tomorrow, Grandpa. Can we play? I said, no, I'm sorry, but it's not today. It's not tomorrow. And she's 4 years old, and she looks up at me and says, but today is yesterday's tomorrow. We need to start getting a handle on this now. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Cunningham.
And Mr. Chair, I still think I have the floor.
Representative Kreisha.
Thank you. And thank you for coming up. And just a comment, and this is to all of us. We have paid lobbyists. We have folks that come here all the time. But when the folks come from a long way and we shut them down, and I've seen that too often from across the board in this legislature, I'm very disappointed. I'm ashamed that we do that. I'm not castigating blame. I've seen this across the board. Thank you for your testimony. I'm sorry you and I probably won't see eye to eye on this bill, but I really needed to hear your story.
And just for the record, the chair did cut off everyone who testified after 2 minutes, including a few paid lobbyists. Representative Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple procedural questions. Number one, Chair Halverson said that this bill is being re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee. Do you know the path of this? Because it seems like a lot of stuff is getting referred to Ways and Means, and for the public who's here and people who are very interested in this topic, just wanting to know what the next committee stop might be after this so that people might be able to plan it into their calendar, given the weather stops that we've got and problems people might want to plan. This is an important thing for Minnesotans, so I'm just curious what the bill path is.
Thank you, Representative Driscoll. My understanding is that the bill will be heard next in the Ways and Means Committee.
But Mr. Chair, you are not aware of what's going to happen once it's in Ways and Means, if it's going to go to the General Register, if that's going to be...
After Ways and Means?
No. It's got to go to HHS.
I don't have not information for you right now on the bill path following Ways and Means.
Very quickly, does the bill author know the path?
Mr. Chair, and Representative Driscoll, the intention at this time is to send it and have it heard in Ways and Means. Technically wouldn't necessarily have to have another committee stop. If another chair requests to see it, we would honor that, but that's the path today.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and the bill author. And Mr. Chair, with that, I'd also like a roll call on the vote today.
Roll call will be taken. And seeing that there's no further testimony?
Mr. Chair.
Chair, if I may close
my comments.
Sorry, yes, you may have the last word.
And I want to thank everybody who testified and everybody who commented on the bill. I think that I want to be crystal clear that reinsurance is not health care reform. Welcome to Commerce, by the way, Representative Lesh. reinsurance is not health care reform. This is a market stabilization member because we want to ensure that premiums are not going to skyrocket as they have in the past. We want to be sure that people who are in the individual market, we added about 20,000 people to the individual market. Reinsurance is a big math problem, and that's what we're trying to solve with reinsurance. And reinsurance exists in other insurance markets as well. It's not just health care. And as I've said, reinsurance has existed prior to this bill coming to the Minnesota House at the federal level. We have a lot of work to do. I think Representative Davids is absolutely right. It's the cost of care. And we're going to hear a number of bills coming forward in this committee, particularly around the prices around prescription drugs, making sure that people have access to care, network adequacy, and other issues. This is nothing more than a insurance that we can make sure that people who are currently getting insurance in the individual market will not be priced out when the next rates are filed. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you. I ask for your support.
Thank you, Chair Halverson. Seeing no further comments.
This is a roll call vote for House File 629. Halverson?
Aye.
Stevenson?
Aye.
O'Driscoll?
Pass at this time.
Carlson?
Yes.
Dean?
I'll pass.
Elkins?
Yes.
Garofalo? Haley?
Pass.
Howard?
Aye.
Katiza Watun?
Aye.
Kreisha?
Pass.
Lesh?
No.
Lislegard?
Aye.
Mahoney?
Aye.
O'Neill?
I'm going to pass.
Richardson?
Yes.
Szczynski?
Pass.
Tapke?
Yes.
Ties?
Yes.
Davids?
Mr. Chair.
Just a minute, we're in the middle of a roll call, so just a moment.
O'Driscoll?
That's what I was going to say. The procedure is to once again, when people pass, to come through. Just was going to help you with that.
O'Driscoll?
Aye.
Carlson?
I was a yes.
Oh. Davids?
Yes.
Dean?
No.
Haley?
Yes.
Kreisha?
Yes.
O'Neill?
Yes.
Szczynski?
Yes.
Ties?
Yes.
There being 17 votes in favor and 2 against, the bill will be referred to Ways and Means. And that concludes the agenda, so the meeting is adjourned.